I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a Whitley comic book podcast. My name is Andrew Levins.
My name is Siobhan Coombs.
And every week we hang out in the King's Comics back offices where the magic happens.
So luxurious.
We review the comics that came out in the last week. We do the DC ones, the Marvel ones, the Image ones, the other ones.
And all the big publishers.
We, you know, every single comic that we talk about on the show can be found at King's Comics, which is 310 Pitt Street in Sydney, or at kingscomics.com. And normally we have up to 50 of comics that we talk about each week. This week, less than 30.
So nice. What a breeze.
Nice, relaxing weekend. So I thought, you know what? 30 comics, not nearly enough for me to read this week. I'm going to read 54 extra comics, and I reread the entirety of Saga this morning.
That's like a treat, though. All in one morning. Wow.
Took
do you feel like
three
emotionally
hours.
Destroyed?
So, look, the reason I did that is that as soon as we finish recording this week's episode, we're going to hit stop, and we're going to hit record again.
Whoa.
Signifying a new... a new audio track recording.
Whoa.
And it's going to be all about Saga, specifically the last arc, and we're going to go in full spoiler territory, which is something that we can't really do episode to episode because I feel like a lot of people read Saga at different paces. But if you are like us and you keep up to date with Saga, this is going to be a very fun episode for you, and you can get it exclusively over at our Patreon. Just kick us a couple dollars and you can get access to a whole bunch of bonus episodes. Our Patreon is patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. And on one hand, yes, you can say I am paying for this extra content. But on the other hand, you could be saying, you know what? I'm going to give my good friends Siobhan and Levins, two hardworking parents who somehow managed to cram in all this comic book reading and letting me know which comics are the ones that I should be reading to.
It's a service, a valuable service.
And I do it for free.
Do it for free.
So maybe I'm going to kick him a couple bucks. And what's that? A nice reward because of that? Fantastic.
Isn't that nice? You get something, we get something, everyone wins.
Democracy.
Absolutely.
Or capitalism.
Capitalism.
Patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast is our Patreon. And that Saga episode will be up shortly after this one. It's going to have lots of people that listen to the show contributing as well. Got lots of emails this week from contributors, which is exciting. I'm looking forward to bawling my eyes out. I reread all of Saga this morning. I keep all of my comics in short boxes in a cupboard in my daughter's room.
Nice.
My daughter is almost two. She's 22 this weekend, so happy birthday,
Tilly.
You know what she said for her birthday? All she wants is for all of her dad's podcast listeners to kick a couple bucks to the Patreon. She's a thoughtful little toddler.
Also, so well spoken.
Yes. She said, she was at school. She wasn't there. Right. But I sat down and with the intention of just kind of like flicking through Saga, at least reading the first arc, and then sure enough, it was like midday, and I'd read the entirety of Saga in 3 hours.
And you were a mess.
Especially like reading it surrounded by all of my daughter's things, because the bulk of that book is about a relationship between a father and a daughter.
Yeah.
Well, you know, depending on which lens you look at it when you read it. I was fucked. And I don't know. There are certain moments that I'm going to talk about in the spoiler episode. I don't know if I'm going to be able to hold it together, because I certainly didn't this morning. So, patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. Please come and support us and get this, what I think might be one of the more fun episodes we've ever done.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I'm looking forward to it.
So, let's get on with this regular, what I assume will also be one of the best, most fun things we've ever done.
Absolutely. Already.
We begin every episode of Serious Issues by going through all of the number ones that came out in the last week. We call this segment First Things First. And we're going to kick off with the number one that had the most pages.
Mad pages.
Infinity Wars, number one. Now, could you believe this is the first number one with Infinity in the title that Marvel have put out this year?
No.
That's a lie. It's like the fourth.
It's like the sixth. 16th.
This is written by Jerry Duggan, who has written all of the Infinity-related books. It's spinning out of his Guardians of the Galaxy series, featuring Mike Diodato on art.
You know what I would like? I would like to sit down with Mike Diodato and ask, what's up with the panel layouts, bro? Do you find that putting all this like random guttering in improves the pace of the story? Am I supposed to be paying attention to that at all? Or is it just annoying?
This is something that he's only started doing in like the last few years.
Yeah.
Mike Diodato Jr. we're talking
junior,
about, of course.
No obviously.
Disrespect for senior. I don't dislike it.
No, it is a stranger. I'm not mad at it, but I'm always like,
it's interesting.
I feel like it slightly interrupts the flow of my reading.
Well, especially when he's like, he just straight up like breaks up
a picture
into panels when it's not actually panels anyway. Colors by Frank Martin on this one. And this is basically telling the story of various Marvel heroes or villains who now hold the Infinity Stones and what they need to do to keep those stones away from Thanos.
And definitely the best way to keep them away from Thanos is for everyone to bring all of the stones together into one place and have a chat about what you're going to do.
In New York City.
In New York City.
Planet Earth, where nothing bad ever happens regarding superheroes or Infinity Stones.
Ever.
So, Star-Lord has one, Captain Marvel has another, Adam Warlock, Turk Barrett, the Daredevil villain, Doctor Strange and Black Widow. And they all convene, or five of them convene. Turk brings an entourage of baddies to discuss the future of the stones.
Mm.
Little do they know that the person that they're trying to keep them from, Thanos, was killed.
Yeah.
Seemingly beheaded by a mysterious individual who is cloaked on the front of this book. Now, listeners, if you care about superhero spoilers, like...
Why? Explain to me why.
We do go over superhero spoilers, but like things like stories that matter,
yeah.
Like Saga, This
is also something like it's only a spoiler as far as like this issue goes. And yep. You're going to like, if you are following this at all, then you already know and you will find out.
We also said as much last week. We guessed it was the first person that we guessed.
Yeah.
That Gamora is the hooded figure who
decapitated. Did you guess that? I have no memory of that.
One of us said Loki, one of us said Gamora. I'm sure someone listening can go back and listen. I certainly won't.
No, me neither.
I've got other ones to put together.
Absolutely.
So Gamora, which is like on one hand, like, oh, I kind of wanted it to be someone surprising, like a blast from the past.
But I did think that this was like earned. I thought that it really worked. And I was like, oh, I actually like that.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about another Marvel book later on in which a mysterious figure killed a bunch of characters, and which feels less earned. We can compare it to this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, we can. Also, having just decapitated Thanos.
And throwing his head
at the group. Gamora decides that nothing ever dies, and so she plunges a sword into Star-Lord's chest.
Yeah. I mean, in Gamora's defense, she has asked very politely a number of times to please have the Soul Stone so that she can go in and get the
part of her that is stuck missing. In the Soul Stone.
And obviously, I don't really understand why no one trusts Gamora in this. Like, let her do her thing. Go for it. She's Thanos' daughter. She hasn't given any reason to not trust her.
I love that because Marvel have broken this up in a little, like, you know, different mini-series. Like, I don't love that, but what I love is that you would have tapped out. And I feel like you have tapped out of this so many times, but it keeps bringing you back into the story.
The world really wants you to keep reading it. Fucking hell.
But I think, you know, Duggan's writing on this, like, it's a very brisk pace. And
would we say this was brisk as it's been like
this issue?
Yeah.
And I feel like the issues themselves are brisk. The event, no.
Yes.
This ongoing, never ending, weird thing that he's
spread out nonsense.
But I still enjoyed this comic and I will be reading the rest of the series.
Yeah, I did enjoy this reveal.
Yeah.
And, I just think Doctor Strange consistently makes bad choices. I think Loki was a much better Sorcerer Supreme.
Okay. Loki's also in this. he's got his own weird little agenda.
Yeah, and there's like an alternate universe Loki who has all of the stones and is like, ha ha ha, and I'm the best.
Worthy Loki. And it looks like his
thank you.
It looks like he gets taken out by a Venom symbiote.
Yeah.
Because in Donny Cates' Venom book, he's kind of exploring the idea that Venom wasn't always just one symbiote. It's something bigger than that. Mm. So, yeah, that could come into play in this too.
Good fun, I suppose.
Yes, good fun, I suppose. Great review. Marvel also put out another number one this week, and this is a book that I think I would have tapped out to were it not for the ridiculous ready schedule, but they finally lost me with this one.
Okay.
Marvel Rising, Ms. Marvel and Squirrel Girl number one. I kept reading it because it has the main writers of both those series, Ryan North and G. Willow Wilson, on this, alongside Devin Grayson, who is fine, and some okay art artists, but this issue has a printing error. And
oh no,
pages are repeated, and I was just like, fuck it,
fucked.
Yeah, can't be fucked.
Also, like, I mean, I recommended this series to a woman who was looking for a superhero story.
Hold on, your mic is cutting out. We'll fix it up live. I'm not editing this. I'm Siobhan. I'm not working right now. Hello, there I am.
Really good impression.
Kind of working. Oh man, it sounds not good. I'm gonna have to pause, everybody. Wait, here we go. You sound good. Great.
Excellent
news. I'm not editing that out. That was really, really good.
That's good content. Anyway, I did recommend this to a woman who was searching for a superhero comic book for her 8-year-old daughter, preferably someone brown. And I was like, have I got the book for you? And she was so like pleased and surprised that there was something that would appeal to her daughter so specifically and so diversely. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Referring to Squirrel Girl's costume, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah. I wish this book was a little less in, like, it's a huge undertaking to read this series because it's like two double issues packed into one each issue with three different writers working on it.
Yeah.
I feel like it should be smaller than that and like, cause it is appealing to a younger reader, but like, that's not how you appeal to younger readers.
Yeah, true.
Over to DC right now, speaking of appealing to younger readers, we get the return of the Super Sons. Damian Wayne and John Kent, aka Superboy, are back. Damian Wayne, aka Robin, I should point out as well. This is The Adventures of the Super Sons, written by Peter Tomasi, with art by Carlo Barberi, and inks by Art Tibbet and Photo Bunker on colors.
Good name.
Or just like a program that they're assigned to put the colors in. So this is kind of after the Super Sons series ended, this is bringing it back and I feel like lowering the kind of tone of it so it reads a lot more like a young a comic for young readers. This reminded me a lot of Peter David's Young Justice run. Maybe from the art point of view as well, it feels like quite throwback early 2000s comic book art as well.
Absolutely, especially once you get the like Baby Injustice gang.
Yeah, and the whole time I was reading Super Sons, I was like, I want lower stakes. I want this to be more fun and about their like dorky adventures together because I love these characters. And that's pretty much what this issue was. Reading back from it now, I'm like, I don't remember what happened. And I don't care. So maybe I didn't want what I thought I wanted.
Yeah, look, to be honest, I don't think I'm going to keep reading this. I think it's like cute and the art's really nice. And I think for kids, this is like great. Perfect. Ideal. And I like the little Baby Injustice gang with the chubby.
That's what happened in this issue.
Deadshot. Chubby Deadshot and girl Captain Cold. Great.
Yep. And little boy Lex Luthor, who's already bald.
Yeah.
For some reason.
And then like a big hairy person. I don't really know who that is. Anyway, yeah, not for me, but for kids, great.
Or people who just love these characters and wanted to see these little dudes fight.
Lynn.
Lynn from Kings. She loves it. What days is Lynn at work anymore? She's at work at Kings? I haven't seen her forever.
Like weekends.
Okay, right. Some weekends. All right. There you go, Lynn. Staffing schedule, now part of the podcast.
She still comes in on Thursday to pick up comics and we chat about comics.
Over to Image now for a book written by John Layman, formerly of Chew, with art by Nick Patara. We also have colors by Michael Garland. This is called Leviathan.
Patara's art looks very, very different colored by this person.
Yeah, totally. This is a Patara is best known for being the Manhattan Projects
artist.
That's
where I know him from.
With Hickman. This is them doing a kaiju comedy. Yeah. I guess we're, yeah, like a from beneath the earth,
I
a big
comedy
monster.
Comedy is a strong word.
Attempt at comedy.
Did you find it funny?
I mean, it's attempted to be. You have a very naked, yeah, obvious Donald Trump sleeping at one point.
That was probably my favorite.
In a bed that says
page.
Get money.
That's what my bed says too. That's a good portrait as well, where you can see like his big pubes.
Miss Merkin.
And his why would he have a self-portrait where his man boobs were that voluptuous?
He thinks he looks good. And he's got a money tattoo on his torso.
Lovely.
But yeah, so basically this is kind of like we see a kaiju attack from like five different points of view. Mm-hmm. Is it in New York? I assume it's in New York.
It always is.
And it follows this one dorky dude who loses his girlfriend because of this attack of this monster. There's a religious guy. There's a cultist kind of guy. And there's
called
some
goth Jimmy, which is what I call Jim from Kings. Actually, no, we don't. We call him Porno Jimmy.
Put him in a kaiju comic. Yeah. This was like, you know, if you're desperate for like a little slice of either creator, this should appease you. But not for me, this one.
Yeah, same.
A little too dorky, goofy, kind of blurky, whatever.
Also, like, kill off the girlfriend in like the first issue. Blah, blah, blah.
That's what I mean. Now all the characters are men.
Yes, awesome. Except maybe the kaiju. But the kaiju's a girl.
Yeah, kaiju could have boobs.
Yeah, how are we supposed to tell if it's a girl if she doesn't have long eyelashes and tits?
Everyone knows kaiju women have... No. End of sentence. Over to Dark Horse now to the Burger Books imprint, started by Karen Berger. And we got a long-awaited number one. I feel like this is when they announced Burger Books, this is like kind of the most excited everyone was about one of the new series started. This is called The Seeds. It's written by Ann Nocenti with art by David Aja. I've not seen either of their names on a comic for a while, so it's obvious that they've been spending a lot of time working on this book. And I had to read this twice.
Yes, I'm looking at
it. Your mic's gone off again. What is going on, Siobhan? What are you doing? Maybe we should swap mics. Yeah, I had to read this one twice because I read it late one night and then I finished it and I was like, wait, what the fuck just happened?
I don't actually remember. I definitely read that, but I don't have the copy in front of me, and so I'm just looking at it like, what happened?
So
what
there
happened?
Bees. There's a town.
Yep.
In this city, this enormous city, is a wall. Okay. There's a wall between the city, and you can travel between the walls, but there, a lot of people choose not to to go over the wall into the other side of the town because there's like different like technology restraints and risks to your health and safety over there.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we meet, there's a reporter. Mm-hmm. Who is basically sent to report on the other side of the wall. We also meet a sex worker who is spending time with someone who wears a mask for the entirety of their time together. Mm. There's something going on with birds and something going on with bees. And at the end of this issue, it's revealed that there are aliens that are trying to fix our Earth, I guess, is my interpretation of it.
Okay.
This is very reminiscent of a Vertigo book, and Karen Berger, of course, was the inventor of Vertigo and the comic imprint Vertigo. She's that horrible feeling you get when you stand up too fast. Karen Berger invented that. So The Seeds is really, really felt like one of those quite strange Vertigo first issues where you're like, I'm not entirely sure what happened.
Yeah.
But I know I hopefully will be more aware of that by the time I finish the next issue. David Aja, his art is like tremendous. It's very
great.
Different to what I've seen him do on superhero books like Hawkeye in the past. I'll be reading all of this series, and I hope to make more sense of it in the future. I think this is a remarkable book. There's nothing. I can't really talk on a grander scale of in terms of story until I've read more of it.
Yeah, totally. But like a very interesting first issue. And I think probably something that most people who listen to this would have picked up anyway. But definitely pick it up if you didn't.
Good advice.
You can still find copies.
Really? Is it sold out everywhere?
I don't know if it's sold out, but it sold really well for us. It's pretty
That's
close.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Nice work. It's a strange and different book. And
absolutely.
It's always good when those things sell well.
People love David
The Seeds. Aja. Burger Books doing some good stuff over at Dark Horse. Siobhan, you read one more number one that I read. Some of them was like, yeah, pass.
Okay, I read Project Superpowers, issue one by Rob Williams and Sergio Davila. And I actually really liked this.
Oh, cool.
It's like an alternate, again, another alternate universe superhero story. And we meet these characters after the they've traveled, one of the ladies has traveled forward into the future and all the other superheroes are dead. She's not a superhero anymore and there aren't really superheroes anymore. And then something crazy happens and she has to be a superhero again.
But then there are all these superheroes that kind of are introduced throughout this story.
Yep.
The reason I stopped reading is that I thought that I should have known who they all were and the comic doesn't do a good enough explanation of introducing them.
Totally. I think that it relies quite a bit on you sort of knowing either who the characters are or having like a pretty good familiarity with like superhero tropes. So I feel like I was like, oh yeah, there's the flying guy and there's the strong guy and there's the woman.
the woman. My favorite superhero trope.
Look, tell me that's not true. But I like it. And I think that they did a good job of introducing like a new character. And I find it hilarious that she seems to, like, she gets draped in, like, an American flag, and that's her superpower. I don't really understand.
Yeah, she just suddenly is covered in an American flag after
and it says, you have been chosen! And the flag helps her punch.
Yeah.
Good power.
Sentient anyway. Flag or superpower?
Combo. combo of the two. But actually, I enjoyed this more than I thought it was going to. Yeah.
Cool.
Fine.
It's Project Superpowers. There was a Zero issue that came out a little while ago.
Right, okay. Did you read that one?
No, again, I read a little bit of it and was like, I don't get this.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's came out through Dynamite, was it?
Yes, again, it's just like sort of another, if you feel overwhelmed by DC and Marvel and you want superheroes.
And more superheroes to be overwhelmed by.
Yeah, well, just if you want a superhero universe that's a little bit more self-contained. I think that, you know, stuff like this in the Valiant universe can be a bit of fun.
But don't too many people get into it because then they'll make more spin-off series based in the same universe and we'll be at the same problem we have with the other series.
Let's keep it small. So don't buy it, actually.
that is it for First Things First. If you started any of those books this week and want to discuss them, we have just the place for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Serious Issues Comic Book Talk Facebook page. And we have thousands of listeners and comic book fans in there talking comics all the time. You can find it at facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast, and we'd love to have you there.
Absolutely.
Now we play a game called Roll the Dice for Image, Marvel, or DC, in which I use a very cool dice that our listener Brad Love made for us.
Thanks, Love.
Images of the various comic publishers attached to a dice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to roll it right now. We're going to do Image first. Then I'm going to do DC, and then finally Marvel. Right. So let's start off with a review of Paper Girls.
Yes, please.
Issue number 23. Brian K. Vaughan, Cliff Chang, Matt Wilson, Jared K. Fletcher. A time-traveling romp starring four teens from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Now set in I don't fucking know when.
The future.
Hanging out with I don't fucking know who.
But other future versions of themselves.
Yeah. And every issue they introduce a new insane concept that you just have to be like, okay, this is happening now.
Yep. Yep. Two of them are on a journey to, cure one of them of a cancer that has been cured in this future.
Yep.
By attacking doctors. Great plan. I'm very into it. Two
with a
versions,
laser scalpel.
Two versions of one of them. So a future version and then the past version and one other are trying to infiltrate to find a girl from the past whose baby they saved.
Yep.
Who may have pretended that her baby was her brother, who is now maybe the evil overlord of this future. what else? What else happened in this issue? It's
completely bonkers. And I feel like, you know, we always talk about how great it is to see Cliff Chang, the artist, do so many incredible high concept, new inventive monsters and robots and future tech. But his the emotion and facial features that he does on the faces of all of the characters, specifically like, you know, young characters that always look the age they're meant to look.
Yes, and old characters with wrinkles and like depth.
Yeah, I mean, if you've read a Captain America book recently, you'll know how hard it is for an artist to draw an old woman.
but women Chang's are young or whores. Sorry.
Cliff Chang's got it down. I just think I love... I love how much emotion and how much work goes into just like the simple facial expressions he's able to put on his on the characters that communicate so much in a book with, you know, some of the best dialogue you'll find in a comic because BKV wrote it.
Absolutely.
He also wrote Saga. Siobhan, where would I go if I wanted to hear an all spoiler episode of Saga?
I don't know. I don't think anything that amazing
exists.
It's called
patreon.com/seriesuspodcast. See you there after this episode.
Woo.
But yeah, great episode of great issue of Paper Girls.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always great. I think it's the I feel like it's weirdly underappreciated as a BKV book.
Comparatively to Saga. I feel like we'll get into this with Saga. Like I love Paper Girls, but there is just something so much more gripping about Saga, whereas this is so high concept. And, you know, Saga is full of high concepts too, but I feel like this is much more of a science fiction.
Yeah, Saga's like about family, whereas Paper Girl is about fucking crazy time travel adventures. Yeah. But I think I look forward to, and I probably enjoy individual issues of Paper Girls more than Saga.
Because it doesn't kick you in the dick anywhere near as much as Saga does.
No, I hate being kicked in the dick.
Tell me about Bloodstrike, the Brutalists.
Bloodstrike, Brutalists by Michael Fife, the creator of Copra.
Oprah.
Oprah. He created Oprah. Thank goodness. But
would you subscribe to a Copra book club, book of the month club?
Yes, I would.
Okay, great.
He does the story, art, and edits on this. So it has a very, I would say, underground 90s vibe to it. And it's like Bloodstrike is a strange team as it is. It's like superheroes who failed in the field and so they died and then they're brought back to life by an evil government agency and sent out to do other jobs that, like, Youngblood can't do. So they're kind of like the X-Force of Youngblood, but of dead clones, which is great. And this issue finished up this little mini arc by Michael Fife, and I really enjoyed it. It's, like, very odd and, like, not super linear. There's lots of, like, death and then coming back, and half of this is just him in a bar talking to someone trying to convince them to come back. But I thought it was really good, and lots of good violence and good action stuff. And now they're sort of redoing the whole Image...
Liefeld-verse.
Yeah. But with some really interesting stuff. So, like... Andrew McLean from Headlopper is going to be doing a Prophet series.
Oh, dude, that's so awesome.
So good. It might just be a one-shot, but either way, like, I am so excited. Then we've got Bloodstrike 3000 from Matthew Allison. Glory and Supreme are going to be in a comic together by Zach Soto.
So, and all of these spin-offs and Bloodstrike Brutalists, like, included, fully embrace the ridiculousness of the 90s and of Rob Liefeld's, you know... Like, they're not trying to be better than what Rob Liefeld was doing in the 90s. They really fully embrace it, and it's like a love letter to what he was trying to do, which is very, very fun to read.
Yeah, I've enjoyed, like, the Glory series by two people who I can never remember.
Joe Keating?
Yeah, Joe Keating and the artist who did Wet Moon.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite books from the last sort of 10 years or so. But also, what kind of a crazy... tease is this. Glory issue 16. The wait is over. Did Alan Moore really come out of retirement to collaborate with Al Columbia together again for the first time? What? Cool.
That's great.
I love Glory.
Awesome. So I read Stray Bullets, Sunshine and Roses, issue number 37.
David Latham has a new comic starting soon, which I'm very excited about.
I hope that means that he's not going to end Stray Bullets very soon, because this feels like it's really reaching the catch-up point that this series has been filling the gap of.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he must be going for a clean 40 of Sunshine and Roses too, which is what the original Stray Bullets series went to. 41, actually.
Cool.
Man, I love this series so much. It's... in my opinion, essential reading for anyone who loves crime fiction, particularly if you like, you know, fairly grim crime stories where everyone makes terrible mistakes constantly, but you kind of love them for it anyway. And it really challenges you to root for, like...
bad guys.
Absolutely bad people.
Mm.
This issue, there are so many... Because basically we know that because this is feeling... In a timeline that we have seen the end of in the original Stray Bullets series, we know that two of the characters that we that feature most prominently in this issue die, and they talk specifically about death in this issue, and it's pretty heartbreaking, you know, because I think they must be like a few months away from being killed.
Oh man,
And it's a real bummer, but it's an incredibly well drawn and written bummer. By a very absolute master, David Latham.
I love a well-drawn bummer.
It's so, so good. I highly recommend everyone reading it. And everyone that does is in my elite club of cool guys.
Oh, that's cool.
We hang out.
You have a club?
Yeah, it's the cool guy club.
No gyms allowed.
You know, I feel like Jim's read the most of Stray Bullets out of everyone room right now, so he's in the club. finally, from Image, The Last Siege, issue number 3. This is written by Landry Q. Walker, Justin Greenwood, Eric Jones, and Patrick Brousseau. Round out the creative team, featuring an incredible variant cover by our boy Ramon Villalobos.
Fuck, I love him so much.
I'm looking forward to his new series coming. Is it DC putting that out?
Vertigo. Yeah. Border Town. Looks amazing.
Real good. But yeah, Last Siege is a medieval comic about someone coming over from the East and bringing his crazy new ways to become the king of a place where... I really loved the first issue of this, and this has become, not by the numbers, but none of the characters look remarkable enough to decipher who they are from other characters.
Yeah.
And I think this would read pretty well, a lot better in trade. So I might wait for the trade to come out on this one. Also, I read this immediately after reading the IDW series, The Highest House.
Oh, okay. I continuously miss that because it sells so well.
And they didn't ship one issue recently. And so I got both of them last week.
Okay.
More on that later when we get into other publishers. But you shouldn't compare things immediately.
But if you're going to choose one medieval-based story to read at this current moment in time.
The Highest House. I can't wait to talk about that, actually.
I'm jealous.
Really, very good. Walking Dead, issue number 182. I'm still reading it. That's your update. I feel like that's been the same review for the last 4 issues of this.
Just keeps going. Just keeps on trucking.
I think there's no zombies in this issue.
Do you think Kirkman will ever let someone else write it?
I feel like that's kind of like a smart move. Yeah. But I feel like
I agree.
When I say I'm still reading it, that's not to put down on the series at all. I just don't know what to say in terms of reviewing it. It's kind of transcended a comic that I can talk about critically. It's just this living thing, this petri dish of American society plus zombies.
Which is kind of amazing. Like, that's a pretty incredible legacy.
Yeah, and the fact that Charlie Adlard, has just been churning out issue after issue on art. Is phenomenal. So yeah. Anyway, no. Good. It was an issue. we talk about next DC. Should we dip in the well of my favorite source of content for this podcast and talk about Batman issue number 52?
Man, okay, I missed 90% of these comics, but yes, let's talk about Batman issue 52.
This is written by Tom King. And art by my favorite Batman artist currently, Lee Weeks, especially when paired with Elizabeth Breitweiser on color. I love his take on Batman, which looks like nothing I've ever seen Batman wear or pose as before, but also feels really reminiscent of all the other Batman stuff that I've loved in the past.
Absolutely.
I also just love his Bruce Wayne. Betty Breitweiser's colors are so good.
So good.
But this is Tom King doing what we wished Charles Soule was doing on Daredevil and doing a courtroom drama book starring Batman, except Batman is basically on a jury. And the court case involves finding Mr. Freeze guilty. And the entire jury is convinced that he is, except Bruce Wayne. Knows that Batman used techniques to get the evidence out of Mr. Freeze that throw the whole case out the window.
Because he was so sad about Catwoman leaving him that he had to beat him to a bloody pulp. Fair enough. We've all been there. Breakups. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like this.
Yeah.
It's a good issue. It's a good story arc. The art's fucking amazing. It's fun. It's interesting. It's genuinely interesting. Like, it's an interesting way of looking at the idea. This is what I want from Tom King.
Yeah.
Good job. Thank you.
Really, really fun. But like different.
Never write a romance book ever, ever again. You don't know how to write romance.
But you do know how to write courtroom drama.
Yes.
So just make Batman a courtroom drama. I mean, it's just every, like, that's he's just always on the jury now.
Yay. Bruce Wayne's like, I volunteer for jury duty forever.
And like just less and less Batman and just it's just Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, yeah.
Jury man.
I want that. Can we make that?
Yeah, sure,
I want that. Have you ever had to do jury duty?
Because I have been a sole trader who works for himself for like over a decade, you just give them your ABN, your Australian business number, and they're like, oh, you're legit. And then they take you off the list. But I was called up 3 times, got the letter 3 times before I was told, hey, just give them your ABN and you never have to do it again.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. So you still have to spend like an entire day and watch the stupid movie they make you watch about why jury duty is important.
Yeah. The problem with... I ended up doing jury duty one time and it was the worst.
What kind of case?
It was like an assault case.
Yikes.
Yeah, it was not fun. But the problem with jury duty is that everyone who's on the jury are the people who want to be on a jury. So they're like unemployed old people who have opinions with a capital O.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that was fine. It was the worst.
You make any lifelong friends on that panel?
I made literally everyone hate me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because you were the only, or was it like a hung jury? Were you the Bruce Wayne of the...
I was. Oh, I was the Bruce Wayne. I was the Bruce Wayne. That's and unreal. No one liked me because I was young, but I was like, but I know about the law.
I assault people all the time.
Look, I've been through these cases before. I know how they work.
Batman also showed up in Deathstroke this week. Issue number 34 continues the Deathstroke versus Batman arc.
Now, we'd sold out of this, so I didn't get a copy. Oh, so you're going to have to tell me about
damn,
it.
Damn, that's so good to know how well this is. Christopher Priest's excellent Deathstroke run continuing with art by... man, I hate saying this last name, but I've got to read it first. Carlo Pagulian.
Nice.
Inks by Jason Paz and Trevor Scott. Jeremy Cox on color. Yeah, this is just a great tangle of, like, you know, mostly very stern and serious written two men coming after each other, Deathstroke and Batman. Uncovering secrets about each other, and but then occasionally they'll just be like the most lewd, gross, crass jokes. And Priest is just such a master of.
He's so good. I don't understand how he gets away with some of the stuff that he says in this book.
Yeah,
because it's like it's Rudy.
Yeah, Rudy Nudie.
Rudy Nudie.
Actually, there's no nudies in this, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Deathstroke or Batman? If you to get a nude, you draw a nudie calendar of Deathstroke or Batman. The silver hair, you, like, yeah. Jim adds, why not both? But this hypothetical is
one. I'm going to say Deathstroke.
Yeah.
Because I think that's
something. Swords. Hello. Swords, silver pubes.
What more do you want?
The sheen
of them both. Also, I think there's something wrong with Batman's penis.
Oh, really?
Why else would he be like that?
Be like what in particular?
Be like a fucking maniac.
Oh, right.
I mean, other than his parents being killed. But you got to assume there's something else going on, right?
Maybe his parents were killed by his weird penis.
Oh my god.
What a complex you'd develop. Anyway, great issue of Deathstroke, and I'll leave it for you to read so you can catch up too.
Okay, thank you.
So we can read the finale together.
Yes, please. All right, tell me what's going on in Mr. Miracle.
Mr. Great Miracle, issue number 10. Excellent cover by Nick Darrington, who has been doing incredible work on the covers across
He's
this
so
board.
Good.
Written by Tom King with Mitch Gerrards on art. Mr. Miracle and Big Barda have brought a child into this world.
And they called him Joseph.
But because Joseph's lighter?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Like, yeah. His middle name is Slatter. He's Slatter.
Is that really?
No.
For a second, I was like, I fucking hate Tom King so much.
He was named after Joseph Ladder, though, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Darkseid has demanded the baby, or else he will bring war unlike what anyone has ever seen.
Why does he want
seen.
The baby?
Because it's he raised both Mr. Miracle and Big Barda on Apocalypse, and therefore he's claiming right to the baby.
Right.
And so Big Barda does not want to have the discussion with Scott about giving their baby to Darkseid, whereas Mr. Miracle is like, come on, we've got to talk about it at some point. And there are some interesting conversations with that funky guy who's like become the babysitter of their kid. There's a pretty amusing part where Ted Kord, Booster Gold, and Mr. Miracle are drunk outside of a bar, and he's ordered a boom tube from his mother box, but his mother box is pretty much an iPhone, and the boom tube is an Uber. So there are delays on the boom tube. Like, you know... So it's slice of life stuff in this larger than life. Larger than slice of life is how I would describe this
book.
Yeah,
just a big slice of life.
But there was a conversation in this in which Big Barda kind of confronts Scott, Mr. Miracle, about his suicide attempt. And it just made me feel uncomfortable reading it in which, like, you know...
In a good way?
She says, when do I get to escape, Scott? And yeah, I look, whenever I read Tom King's books now, I think of your comments about how he doesn't really know how to write women. And I feel like I've always thought Big Barda was the best character of this series and like, you know, reason for me to keep reading. And obviously I don't expect her to be like this positive force in Scott's life. He's, you know, he's always the mopey one. But when she is too, and
how quick almost, is their baby grown up as well?
I mean, it's a fast moving series.
Yeah. How old is the baby supposed to be now?
Like 18.
One year?
No. 18. No. 1 year old, I guess. Yeah, it's his birthday. It's their first birthday.
Right,
first birthday. I don't know. I found that scene problematic. It's not the right word. Just uncomfortable for my tastes.
Heavy-handed.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we say that about every issue, even the good ones. But yeah, look, I've got two issues left to go. Mm. I'm gonna see this series out. I'm definitely not enjoying it as much as I was when it started. I think it's... I feel like The Vision, for example, which is a great one to compare it to because it is 12 issues as well and was deeply rooted in relationships and sadness. I feel like that brought in... like so much more to the story as opposed to like the story being at the background of this series, almost like minutia that you don't even need to pay attention to. It's more about the feelings and the drama that come from the mundane day-to-day stuff that's at the forefront of this book. But I think, I think that the story was why I loved The Vision so much, and obviously the characters within it. This story is not comparable in any way, you know.
Yeah.
It obviously it comes down to your personal taste of what you want to read in a comic, but I think I've lost patience with what this comic is trying to do.
I probably shouldn't really even be commenting because I didn't read the issue, so I'm not 100% sure what exactly he's getting at, but I don't like the suicide as escape thing. Do you know what I mean? Profoundly uncomfortable.
Not great. I get it. I think suicide is definitely something that, you know, should be explored within art. But
yeah.
I don't know if heavy-handed is the way to explore it.
Yes.
Justice League, issue number 5. I picked it up because it has the Legion of the Doom on the front. Luther and Joker and Sinestro and Black Manta.
There's
Cheetah,
nothing that's
Gorilla
more
Grodd.
Lex Luthor than flying through the air punching.
No, he's pointing. He's pointing
at
pointing.
Us. Oh, I'm sorry.
This is actually written by James Tynion IV.
Oh,
with art by Doug Mankey. And I was cool, okay.
I like both of those people.
Yeah, except this is just James Tynion IV telling, retelling the first three issues, four issues of Justice League from Lex's point, Lex Luthor's point of view.
Why?
What did you just happen?
I don't know.
Siobhan tried to drink a comic.
I choked.
And I was just like, it actually reaches the same cliffhanger that we got at the end of issue 4.
So what was the point of this?
I don't know. I get, you know.
You see it from his perspective?
The point of this is to not make a good case for double shipping.
Absolutely. I can't think of a good example of double shipping. When has a double ship comic been good? Sounds like I'm crying.
When Greg Rucka was telling two timelines during Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
This is great. I'm going to try and think of something that I know you don't like and so you can talk about it and it makes you sound emotional about it. Anyway, I think I'm finally off this book. I gave it 5 issues. I'm off Justice League. But you know what Justice League book I love? The Injustice League. Not really.
What?
Injustice 2, my favorite DC series.
Mm, this again sold out. So wow, I get to damn. Read.
Written by Tom Taylor. When did you pick up your comics this week?
Thursday.
Okay. Me too.
Look at those interiors. Who did that? Is that Doug Mankey?
No, it's not. It is, I'm trying to find it. It is Daniel Samper.
Oh, lovely.
With inks by Juan Albaran and colors by John Calise and Rex Locus.
Looks good.
Like, I know we're excited about Grant Morrison's Green Lanterns run, but I don't know if it could be more fun than what this issue is.
Fun is what I expect from it.
Yeah, but it's good to read a fun one, right? So a disgraced Hal Jordan is reluctantly given a ring when the Red Lanterns, under the command of Starro, try and take down both the Green Lantern Corps and the Guardians at the same time.
Why is he disgraced?
Remember, I've told you this fucking 50 times. He sided with the evil Superman in the first Injustice series.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Which led to the death of many, including...
why did he side with...
Guy Gardner.
Yeah, I remember the Guy Gardner guy, but yeah. Why did he side with Superman?
Because Superman made a, you know...
Like, compelling case?
Or, you know,
he's like, I'm fucking crazy now.
How do you say no to Superman? I guess, I don't know.
Anyway, sorry. Please continue.
And anyway, because they need all the help they can get, which includes a Titans team featuring Booster Gold, Lobo, who gets cut in half in this issue.
Sick. Does Lobo have like healing powers?
Yeah, he does. And when he starts healing, there's this great moment where he goes, okay, I'm starting to grow back everything already. And then it just cuts this brilliant panel of Booster Gold sticking his tongue out and then asking a guardian if this planet has any pants.
is Lobo's dick like?
Well,
covered in spikes. Continue.
Yeah. So anyway, Hal Jordan is given a ring so he can help fight Starro and the Red Lanterns.
And get married.
Sinestro, who has been imprisoned by the Green Lanterns, is given a green ring as well because they need all the help they can get. And then the last person that you'd ever expect to get given a green Lantern ring is Lobo. And I don't even like Lobo, but this sells it in such a way that I was just like, the comic ended, and it ends with Lobo putting on a Green Lantern ring. The thing says, Lobo of Sarnia, you have the ability to overcome great. And then he goes, less ceremony, more powers. Welcome to the Green Lantern Corps. And then he says, fuck yeah. And
great.
Then I said fuck yeah also. This is a great series.
Lobo is one of those characters that in the right hands, I'm like, yes,
yeah, totally.
Such gold.
So fun.
That's so fun.
Yeah. There's just this brilliant bit. Like, he just, like, yeah, the guy, the Green Lantern just goes, what choice do we have? And hands it over. Oh, just great. Tom Taylor has such a great handle on literally every character in the DC universe.
It's like, really impressive.
It's fucking incredible.
It's such a, like, light touch that he has that just sort of feels like he's just, like, juggling all these things in this really expert way.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Great issue. Finally, from DC, over from their Young Animal imprint, we have the finale of our favorite Young Animal series, Shade the Changing Woman, written by Cecil Castellucci, art by Marley Zarconi, and colors by Kelly Fitzpatrick, inks by Andy Parks. And look, I think this was a good ending.
Yeah.
I feel like this series needed another 12 issues, just like the first series, to fully explore the much bigger story she seemed to be telling in this arc, which involved, like, you know, other characters becoming Green Lanterns.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit of a theme going on. But, and like a lot more tying into the DC universe, which I thought was like a lot more natural than any other Young Animal books were doing.
Yeah,
even Mother Panic, which I enjoy, like, you know, they're in an alternate Gotham.
I don't know. I just think this was like a really perfect ending. I think that they really closed out the whole series in a way that felt very genuine. I don't think it felt rushed. I think it felt great.
You know, I shouldn't have said rushed. Quick. It just felt quick.
True. I could deal with this going on forever.
I can spend so much more time with the characters. But I just thought the problem from the last few issues was resolved very quickly. It ends on like a nice kind of cliffhanger that hopefully we get more of.
Yeah.
And from that moment, like that final page, that's a brilliant final page. Yeah, I think this just goes on how much I loved the characters and the art, the story. I could have spent a lot more time with it, I'm not disappointed at all. I just wish it was another 12 issues.
Yeah, I feel like this is definitely something that I'm gonna sort of. I hope they collect it all in one volume, and that then
beautiful hardcover.
I would just love to give this to everyone that I know, because I think it's so beautiful and so well paced, and the sort of themes that they dealt with. Like, it's kind of almost like the same themes as that Tom King deals with, but in like a much more sophisticated way and using the genre in a much more impressive way, I think.
Yeah. So there's a letter from Gerard Way at the end of this, in which he talks about there being an issue 13 of Doom Patrol and 12 coming very soon. And apparently there's going to be more Young Animal stuff in the near future.
Yeah, what else have they announced? Jim, do you remember what other Young Animal stuff they've announced?
I don't think they have.
Oh, I thought they had.
No, I think, yeah, I guess it's just kind of like a promise of more. I just, you know, I hate that Doom Patrol is the one that continues.
I wish it was
Shade.
Yeah.
Shade's so good. Yeah, so look, I think even with one issue of Mother Panic left and one issue of Eternity Girl left, I can safely say that Shade Changing Woman was absolutely my favorite thing to come out of the Young Animal imprint.
Same.
And required reading for everyone that wants to read something a little different from the big two.
Absolutely agreed.
RIP, may you come back ASAP.
Yes, please. With the same creative team.
Of course. No, please don't let anyone else do this book.
Yes.
It was such a perfect match. And look, I mean, if we can't get more Shade, then I hope Cecil and Marley make their, and Kelly Fitzpatrick as well.
Yeah.
Great colors. I hope they make their way over to Image to do a creator own one, because I reckon it'll do really well.
Yep.
Yep. So let's go over to Marvel right now for issue 2 of Death of the Inhumans.
Whoa.
Written by Donnie Cates.
It's the jerk from Batman. It's the Batman.
Pretty much.
Jerk.
Ariel Olivetti on color, on art with Jordi Belair on colors. This is, yeah, literally all the Inhumans die at some point in this miniseries.
Yeah.
And while the first issue got a lot of some of the shocking deaths out of the way, I did not see the final death of this one coming so early in the series. We don't know if the death actually happens. I suppose it does.
I would be surprised if it took. You know what I mean?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, I feel like all the deaths we've seen in this series so far, they're either going to get undone by the end of this mini series,
mm-hmm.
or they'll come back pretty soon after. Like, I think this is a really well done book, considering the kind of shock value kind of book it is. And there's, you know, I love Black Bolt, you know, yelling the names of the dead Inhumans as his way of taking out his enemy. I thought that was wonderful.
Absolutely.
But I hate that they're all dying at the hands of this, like, you know, no name black masked villain. Maybe it'll be revealed that he has a bigger connection to all these characters than we know so far.
Yeah, he's got a tuning fork on his head.
So it could be, you reckon he's going to be like Black Bolt from the future?
Maybe.
Yeah, possibly.
Something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I wish it was someone that had more stake in the story, or someone that was introduced in a more recent arc or something. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. I sort of think, like, so far, this is a series that has, like, genuine impact. It has some like great moments.
Sure.
Like Karnak saying, "I told you, the king has prepared a statement." And then Black Bolt comes in and just destroys everything with his sweet vocal powers. But I like this. I think it's sort of clever.
Too.
It's a weird balance of like a kind of courtly war games / ultra violence, and like there seems to be real. There's like real stakes,
yeah,
in space.
Obviously,
space stakes.
Enormous stakes.
And the Kree are back being jerks.
Yeah,
it's great.
Totally. Yeah, but like I don't know. Imagine if like the bad guy was Ronan the Accuser.
That would
work.
Yeah, I'm sure that'd be fine. I mean, like imagine it is, and it's the same thing.
Okay, sure. You can still have it any comic. Imagine this bad comic is a good one. Huh? So
it's
Donny
the same
Cates.
Thing. It's still a comic book. What's your fucking problem?
Donny Cates also wrote issue 2 of Cosmic Ghost Rider this week, which is had art by Dylan Burnett, which is awesome art. I really love it. And Antonia Favella on colors. This is a big, silly cosmic story in which in which Frank Castle, after making a series of deals with extremely big cosmic beings, also has the power cosmic himself. And
is also a ghost rider.
Yes, that's right. And he has taken on the task of raising Thanos to be not evil. And it's big and stupid and...
So fun.
So much fun. And I love the Watcher showing up to watch him make an incredibly bad decision. Like, you know, if you're a Punisher fan, don't expect to see any resemblance of the Frank Castle you know and love.
No,
from any Punisher
very
before.
Punishing.
Like, he's just a wacky character in a space suit that has a Marvel history. But man, it's so much fun. And at the end of this issue, after he decides to be the one to raise Thanos, the Guardians of the Galaxy show up, but it's an alternate universe Guardians of the Galaxy led by Cable, with a Captain America Ms. Marvel hybrid, a
Jubilee,
like a Nova Rocket Raccoon, and then a Howard the Duck Juggernaut. Brilliant.
Amazing. So good. Everything that I wanted in this.
And just
Jugger-duck.
Jugger-duck. Perfect. Duckernaut. Man, it's just so much fun. It's so silly. I'm really, really loving it.
Yeah, absolutely. So good. The moment where the Watcher says, Francis, by making this choice, you've just created a timeline in which the Punisher raised Thanos as a child. And immediately everything starts getting fucked. It's amazing. I love it.
So great. I highly recommend it. It was also like the perfect antidote to like the bummer of all the characters dying in Death of Inhumans.
Yeah.
Just to read this like super fun, wacky space book.
Johnny Cates has range.
He does. Ta-Nehisi Coates is the current writer of Captain America, and he did the second issue of this series this week with art by Lionel Francis Yu, colors by Jerry Alanguilan.
Such iconic
Sorry,
covers.
Sorry, inks by Jerry Alanguilan and colors by Sonny Go.
Very iconic covers by Alex Ross.
Yeah. In the first issue of this, I was like, I wasn't expecting Coates to lean as hard as he did into the Secret Empire event that Nick Spencer wrote.
I like that he's dealing with that head on.
Well, then he leant into it even harder in the second issue. Where kind of Mark Waid seemed to kind of acknowledge it, but then kind of sweep it on under the rug and then move on with his story. This is going to be all Steve is dealing with. Like, he's basically dealing with an America that hates him.
Or
doesn't accept him, is scared of him.
Yeah. Doesn't trust him.
Mm. You would think that this would lead him to do many things that would be considered trustworthy by the government, but it's revealed that he's doing secret undercover work for Wakanda.
Hell yeah.
Which is great. I mean, obviously Coates is the writer of Black Panther, and I guess now we're going to see these two books maybe interlope somehow.
Mm.
That's fun.
I'm into it. I like it. I like the continued relationship between Steve and Sharon. I like that he sort of respects her as like an individual.
Yep.
Such a fucking low bar. But it's good. And I enjoyed it.
I think he drew a good older woman too in Sharon. In this.
Yeah.
A lot of artists struggle with it.
Yeah. It's tough. Especially because like I feel like the age that she currently is a bit like all over the place. People old woman. You mean like mid-30s.
She'd be like late 60s.
And also it feels like there's some kind of like Captain America made a weird bargain with Kobik. Is that something that we've actually seen, or is this something that he's going back to kind of
I feel like this is either a suggestion of something we've not seen before or a further exploration of a mere mention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The bargain that he made to get his strength back.
So it's cool. Yeah. It's not the super exciting Cap book that I want it to be, but I know we're heading in that direction and then that's fine.
Totally. And I like the Coates sort of really just dealing with the universe that he's been given, but also then dealing with like larger themes to do with America and the sort of what Captain America's presence created, like all these nukes.
Yes.
Not nuclear weapons. The man whose name is Nuke.
Yes.
Who has the flag tattooed on his face.
Yep.
Great.
Flag face man. The Immortal Hulk continues its fantastic run, written by Al Ewing with art by Joe Bennett and colors by Roy Jose. Basically the Hulk is Bruce Banner is walking around using his Hulk powers to inflict justice on those who have used gamma radiation for bad.
Mm-hmm.
There is a reporter. Is a reporter or I can't remember.
Journalist
who is kind of like trying to get the full story on Bruce Banner.
Trying to track him down.
She has a lead in that of Wendigo from Alpha Flight.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? IRL?
Wendigo.
Wendigo. Walter Lankowski. Right. The two of them kind of try to track Bruce together. When Walter is put into a coma at the end of the issue, while in the waiting room, the journalist comes face to face with a de-hulked Bruce Banner who is going to give her the story that she's after. But first, they need to deal with an enraged Wendigo in an operating room. Because remember, this is still a horror book.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And because Wendigo might be dead, but the evil demon that inhabits his body may not be.
Yes. Really, really good shit.
So good. The art is so good. This is like a pure horror comic. And the moments, like there are a couple of moments in this that are so good. Like we find out that the reporter saw the Hulk when she was very, very young. And there's a moment where her dad's like, don't make eye contact. Don't make eye contact. Like he's a fucking wild animal. She makes eye contact and you just see this close up of his eyes. And it's really like jarring and horrifying. And the moment where she realizes that she's sitting next to Bruce Banner is also great.
Yep. Nice and creepy.
Al Ewing is just, this is my favorite Al Ewing book I've ever read.
Definitely.
And like, without question.
Considering that we were like, you know, associated him with being like a cosmic guy for
mm-hmm,
so long.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
I feel like this is a story that he's had in his brain for a really long time.
Yeah.
And he's just nailing it.
Definitely. So now let's go to X-Town.
Yeah. Okay. I read two X-Men books because I hate myself. So I read Astonishing X-Men by Matt Rosenberg with Greg Land. And you know what? I think I'm going to have to add Matt Rosenberg to my list of men who don't really know how to write women. Unfortunately, I feel bad.
What about the main character of Four Kids Walk Into a Bank?
Child woman. Adult woman, he's a bit like, I don't really understand. I don't understand this version of Dazzler, I suppose. This is a version, we've seen a lot of weird versions of Dazzler lately. And this is a version of Dazzler who is like failing as an artist and desperately wants to be on an X team again.
No one knows how to write Dazzler or what to do with her.
I liked that one where she was like an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. That was cool. That worked. That was
Bendis?
Yeah, that worked. I also hate Greg Land. It's very hard for me to read a Greg Land comic and feel good about it. And I don't think that Greg Land and Rosenberg work well together.
Yeah, it was a really weird choice when those two were
announced.
I
don't think that Land is able to sell the jokes.
Right.
And I don't think it's great. This is like a weird X team headed up by Alex Summers, who's like lost his mind a bit. And Kitty Pryde's like, you can't have the X-Men. I own that name. And he's like, I'm just going to make my own X team. And so it's him and Beast and Warpath and Banshee brought back from the dead. And Colossus, who just sits around in his underpants drinking vodka all day because he's like, Kitty left me, I have nothing.
He should get on a jury panel.
I have nothing. That's my Russian accent. You're welcome. And this is, I'm just not going to read anymore.
All right. R.I.P.
Then I also read X-Men Gold Annual number 2.
This is a cry for help if there ever was one.
Yeah, absolutely. Written by Seanan McGuire. Good name. Seanan. Art by Marco Fela. Colors by Rochelle Rosenberg. And this is...
Oh, man, I do not like that art.
Yeah, it's all right. It's okay. This is a set-in-the-past story about Kitty Pryde going to camp. Camp story when she was a teenager.
The pencils are good. I just don't like the colors at all.
The colors are a bit dated. I don't know if that's like an intentional choice or if it's just a bad call. It's a bad call either way. But anyway, this is like Kitty Pryde being like, I still want to be a normal teen, so I'm going to go to school camp in the 80s. But she goes there and all of her camp friends are like, fucking mutants. And she's like, oh no, life is hard for me because I'm a mutant. And that's the end.
All right.
And it was absolutely fine and absolutely inessential, probably. But guys.
Finally, in keeping things X for a minute, is the finale of Hunt for Wolverine, Weapon Lost by Charles Soule, in which nothing is wrapped up.
Nice.
They don't find Wolverine, and it looks like all of these mini events that still have great creative teams behind them, nothing is going to be resolved in any of them.
Because they're doing a Return of Wolverine series written by Charles Soule with art by whoever did the art. Or Steve McNiven, because they both did Death of Wolverine.
Oh, right. That's
but
nice.
Like, symmetry. Why give us all of these shitty Hunt for Wolverine books before Death of... Just give us Return of Wolverine.
If they weren't hunting Wolverine in this, if it was for some other reason that they assembled Daredevil, Misty Knight, and Frank McGee, and Cypher, then this book would be really, really great. But because it's tacked on, this Wolverine thing is kind of feels tacked onto it, which is weird because it was written by Charles Soule.
Mm-hmm.
He should be like, you know, masterminding this whole event. I just like it does. Felt like a bit nothing to me. I enjoyed the journey to get to the nothing, but then at the end, you still got fucking nothing.
Yeah.
So, whatever. Art by Matteo Bufagni is really good, and colors by Jim Charalampidis. Really good, too. It's a great looking book. I loved seeing the interactions between Misty and Frank, and I hope we get to see more of that in the future.
That's cool.
But, the resolution here is that Wolverine should have stayed dead. Because they think that Wolverine is out there killing random people, which obviously he isn't.
That's what Wolverine does. He's the best at it.
Yeah. Anyway, those are our Marvel reviews. Image reviews, DC reviews, all done. Now we move over to other publishers. And look, I talked about it briefly earlier, but last night I read issues 5 and 6 of the IDW series, The Highest House.
God, those covers are so nice.
It's a
nice
comic that I regret not collecting.
Yeah,
but
same.
I'm sure that the first trade is going to look as nice as these singles has. I just love the covers so much.
If you somehow find all of the singles of this, get it, guys.
It's worth the covers are by someone called Yuko Shimizu,
who did all of the covers for The Unwritten.
Right, and it's the same creative team on writing and art. We've got written by Mike Carey with Peter Gross on art. And this is the story of Moth, who is a young boy sold into slavery, who meets a supernatural being, a demon, who is trapped in a stone beneath this enormous... basically, he gets moved to a community called the Highest House, because it's the house that overlooks all the land, and he works for a king, and he basically accidentally and through the help of this demon works his way up the ranks of the staff at the Highest House, and basically is, you know, he's been offered freedom so many times, but he says no to it and gets other perks instead. And issue 6 was the finale of book 1, and it is such a satisfying conclusion to this first arc that I just... Like, Carey is a great writer who I feel like is pretty underappreciated in terms of being, like, one of the great comic book writers. I love his Hellblazer run a lot. And I've enjoyed what I've read of his Unwritten run. I have it all. I just haven't read it all.
I loved The Unwritten. Almost until the end.
Oh.
But you know me.
Yeah.
I don't really like to finish things.
So I thought you said the ending was bad. You just didn't
read it. No, I did think the ending was bad, but... So I stopped reading it. It got boring.
But yeah, the Highest
House
is...
First couple of volumes. Hoo boy.
The characters in this, like, you know, obviously you have the hierarchy, you know, that kind of that great thing that makes, what's the British, the show based off of Gosford Park with the...
Upstairs, Downstairs.
Yes, Upstairs, Downstairs. What the fuck is the show called?
With the guy from The Thing. I know what you mean.
The period drama. Yeah. Esque.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah, whatever the fuck it's called.
About servants and
I've watched
rich people.
30 episodes of this show and I cannot remember what it's called.
Same. Is it the name of the house?
Mr. Havisham? Is that his name?
No. The Havishams are from Sense and Sensibility, right?
Whatever.
It's got the guy who played Beast in Beauty and the Beast. And was also in
I love the idea
things.
Of like of our listeners like going, fuck you,
yeah.
It's blah, blah, blah.
It's called
British drama. What do I look up? I don't even know what to call it. Period?
Yes. British drama's about periods.
Fuck, what the fuck is it called?
I like that we're doing this in real time as well. It's
not
called
the Crown. Downton Abbey.
We knew that.
We're the best podcast. But yeah, you have like the high. I was like, why don't I even talk about Downton Abbey? I forgot from a moment. Sorry. You have like the contrast of how the royalty live versus how the servants and the workers live in this same community in the same under the same roof, basically.
Got problems, you know.
But
I mean?
There's a fucking demon.
There's also demons.
And you have this character Moth, who's a really captivating character. Like, you know, doing things outside of his comfort zone, be it talking to a demon and making deals with a demon, or trying to hide himself from certain members of the royal family, and being sent out on quests as by the king, who, you know, learns more and more about Moth and is just enthralled by, like, you know, what makes this character tick. And it ends on a really personal moment that just felt fucking fantastic, and I just cannot wait for the series to return. And I, like, you know, Christmas or whatever, buy yourself the Highest House trade.
It's, yeah, absolutely.
These 6 issues were so good, and it ends on such an awesome, awesome, satisfying note. My favorite comic that I read this week.
Yeah.
And it was a real treat, like, you know, reading these 2 issues one after the other in bed last night. It was just, I felt like I was rewarding myself for nothing that I'd done recently. But yeah, it was great.
Nice. Oh, that's good.
Sometimes comics, you know, like,
sometimes they're not a slog. Sometimes they're a reward.
Yeah, this one feels really, really unique.
It is,
and it's a really rich kind of classic storytelling style that it does feel like a real treat to read.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
The art's brilliant, and it's, you know, just it's this, the collection of these creators coming together to create something really special, and it's in a nice big oversized format. And at first, I was like, why are they doing that? And now I'm like, oh, now I know.
Because this book is a specific reason. No, it's just gorgeous. Like,
it's just gorgeous,
worthwhile.
And it's special. It's special. That's why. So yeah, the end of part one of Heist House, extremely satisfying. My only criticism is that this is the kind of series that I wish had a letters section or some form of back matter from the creators.
I'd love to like learn more about his kind of like research and like how he goes about sort of coming up with where does he get his crazy ideas?
Totally.
That's what I'd like to know.
Yeah, so good. Anyway, so please, when the trade comes out or digitally or whatever, go catch up on the Heist House because it's absolutely a series that demands your time.
Yep.
Deserves your time. Let's go over to Dark Horse now for the Quantum Age issue number 2 from the world of Black Hammer. This is written by Jeff Lemire with art by Wilfredo Torres and colors by Dave Stewart. This is basically Jeff Lemire doing a Legion of Superheroes story, except set in his Black Hammer universe.
And with swears.
Lots of swears. You know, I like that, like, in a book about, you know, history and drama and space and Mars and, and like superheroes and stuff like that, you have so many small intimate moments, which is why you read Lemire books.
Absolutely.
And
also because one of the characters is a talking like space armadillo.
Yeah.
Great.
Wilfredo Torres's art is awesome. I just love the rate that we're getting new entries in the Black Hammer universe.
I can't believe how quickly
Lemire just churns them out, and they never feel, they always feel nice and different with a story that deserves to be told.
Absolutely.
And this ends on a particularly intriguing end.
And we get to learn more about the Martians in this universe. It's very similar to like Martian Manhunter's kind of backstory.
And it's a direct link to Barbalian from the main Black Hammer series, which
is
it's cool. It's a really, really great story set, you know, far into the future in the same world as the great Black Hammer comic. It's awesome stuff. And, highly recommend reading this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Finally, I read the final issue of Valiant High through Valiant. Did you drop off this one?
No. Okay. I'm pretty sure I read this. I was going to try and look through it. I definitely did get a copy, but I can't remember if I actually read it through to the end.
Written by Daniel Kibblesmith with excellent art by Derek Charm. We've also got other people who were on the creative team. David Barron and Simon Boland adding to this long roster of people. Boland did the letters, David Barron did the colors. This is like, the final issue of Valiant High, 4 issues in. Of course, you've got to end on prom night.
Absolutely.
And all the characters, you know, do come together as heroes to stop.
Dance and make out.
Yeah. And this wasn't my favorite issue of the series, but it was a nice, sweet end with excellent art by Derek Charm. This is maybe my favorite thing that he's done, I think. He has a really...
His Jughead run was pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah, I just think that it's fun seeing him do like superhero shit.
True.
Because like, you know, I feel like he only does like comedy books. Mm-hmm. And this was a comedy book until the final issue where you see a big fun superhero fight, except everyone is wearing prom suits and gowns. And of course, Livewire wins the homecoming queen when she takes down the bad guy by wearing a car.
Hell yes.
Yeah. Fun, very fun series, and as I've said each time I've reviewed an issue, a surprisingly good introduction to the Valiant universe, even though tonally it's nothing like any other Valiant book. It's a good way to kind of get to know the bare minimum for each of the characters.
It's my favorite shit that I feel like they used to do with lots of manga and anime, is you'd get the main series and then you'd get, but what if they were all in high school together?
Yes.
And I was always like, yes, this is my best shit. They should do that for all series.
Well, Siobhan, that is it for all the comics that we're going to talk about this week, except we're about to record maybe now like a full hour or something of Saga talk, because we're doing a full spoiler cast of the series Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples.
Woo.
If it's something that you would love to hear, you can hear it over at our Patreon page, which is you can find at patreon.com/serious issues podcast. There's also a spoiler cast all about Kill or Be Killed, plus countless episodes Siobhan and I reviewing graphic novels that we've read outside of the podcast, and other weird little bonuses too. All it costs is a couple of bucks. You know, you can choose how much you give to us to join the Patreon. And each month that gets deducted out of your account, goes straight to us, and it allows us to dedicate more time to the podcast and doing more fun bonus episodes like the Saga one. You can find it over at patreon.com/serious issues podcast. Thank you so much to everyone listening who already supports us, and welcome to the smart of you. The smart of you who are going to join us very, very soonly. you can find us online, facebook.com/serious issues podcast, or join our group, facebook.com/groups/serious issues podcast. We're on Twitter @serious_issues, or Siobhan is @SiobhanCBG. I'm @LevDog, LevDawg. And we love to hear from listeners, especially if it's telling us that Saga made them cry.
Yeah.
So, you know, do that.
Yeah.
After listening to our bonus episode, of course. Yep. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week, in which we will be reviewing many, many comics. I've got my order for the next week here.
Is it a big week?
No, not, no, it's like 30-ish.
That's pretty reasonable.
The final issues of Eternal Empire and Eternity Girl. We have the first issue of the new Fantastic Four series by Dan Slott and Sarah Pacelli. I read a preview of that and I was like, oh, yep, I'm on board. This looks good.
Okay, cool.
We've got a new Strangers in Paradise.
Yes, please.
Issue. We've got some a lot of number ones here. But
oh, good.
Lots of stuff that we love too. Don't worry. We'll be fine. See you next week. Enjoy yourselves. Goodbye.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.